At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome into another episode of Tailgate Talk SEC. I am Will Thomas. Week 4 recap. Had some great action yesterday throughout the country, but really in the SEC. So let's just dive right into this. I'll start off with the cupcake games, then I'll get into the bigger ones and some of the complications that come from some of those bigger games, including a coach that I believe should have coached his last game for his current team last night. I think we all know who I'm talking about, but we'll get to that in a second. Starting off with these cupcake games, NIU went to Mississippi State and the Bulldogs won 38-10. They handled business, did what they were supposed to do. They didn't have the best passing game yesterday. Blake Shapen was 12-20, just for 160 yards and a score, but they ran for 292 yards as a team. Fluff Bothwell ran for 101, Shapen ran for 51. They did what they were supposed to do when a MAC team visits you. Just another tune-up game for Mississippi State before conference play really kicks off. Then UAB went up to Knoxville to play Tennessee, 56-24 Vols. The offense looked just as good as it has been throughout the year. Aguilar threw for 218, 3 touchdowns, and a pick. That total number of passing yards is just down because of how the game went. I'm not at all worried about the fact that he didn't get to 370 again. He could have if they wanted to. They had 239 on the ground as a team again. Did Tennessee. That power run game still works incredibly well. Chris Brazel and Mike Matthews both got in the end zone through the air. They did allow Jalen Kitna, UAB's quarterback, to throw for 364 and 2 touchdowns. That's probably a little too much. For your defense, but they're still getting healthy. They're still getting together. And a 30-point win is a 30-point win, right? This game was still never in doubt. They still blew out the lesser opponent that came up to their campus. So nothing wrong with Tennessee there. Sam Houston at Texas, 55-0 Longhorns. There's Texas, and there's Arch Manning. They finally played like the team we thought they were going to be yesterday. Arch was 18-21 passing for 309 yards and 3 scores. 264 on the ground for them as a team. Ryan Wingo caught 4 passes for 93 yards and 2 more touchdowns. They forced 5 sacks, 10 TFLs. Things finally clicked for Texas. They finally looked like a clean, efficient, elite operation that fans have been waiting on. And there was controversy about the video of when Arch ran in, I believe, to go up 14-0, when he kind of taunted and got in the face of that Sam Houston State defender. Now, I understand the critique of that, right? Because you're Texas, you're playing against a very small in-state school on your campus that you're clearly better than. Why are you taunting them? I liked it a lot. I really liked it because Arch has been struggling. There was so much pressure and expectations on him coming into the year, and he hasn't met them yet, whether that's because of injury or he wasn't ready. There's been so much negative discourse about him, part of which was me. But when he finally got in there, clearly he was feeling great yesterday, as you can tell by the points and his stats. When he finally got in the end zone, seeing that fire and that competitiveness, that's a killer instinct. Being willing to really just get in the face of anybody when you dominate them, that I think is a plus, because you need that sort of competitive fire with every single opponent to be great in this sport. Because if you don't take weak teams seriously, that's when you get into trap games. That's when you start to fall asleep. Arch didn't do that. He was fired up. He was locked in, and he was letting them know about it. I was a fan of that, because seeing him get more confident, get more comfortable, get more energetic and more fiery, that's what Texas needs, and that's good for that offense. It's good for that whole team. So I was a fan of Arch getting in that guy's face. That might be an unpopular opinion, but I was a big fan of it. Moving on, Southeast Louisiana went to Baton Rouge to play LSU, 56-10, clobbering by the Tigers. Offense might be coming around, question mark, because against some other weaker opponents like LA Tech, LSU still looks slow, but they look great late yesterday. Nussmeier, 25 of 31 through the air for 273 and 3 touchdowns. Only 135 rushing yards as a team. Not great. LSU's running game still needs to come around, but their defense has still looked elite. 4 sacks, 7 TFLs, only allowed 116 passing yards and 89 rushing yards. Big test at Ole Miss this week for LSU. We'll be talking about that a lot later on this week. That'll be a big-time game, really, for both programs, because LSU has to prove that they really are this elite team, even though they've been struggling with some teams who are no longer looking that great, and Ole Miss is coming around with Chambliss at quarterback. Georgia State at Vanderbilt, 70-21. Revenge has been dealt for the Commodores. They went to Georgia State and lost last year, absolutely blew them out. Yesterday at home, Pavia was 18 of 24 passing for 245 and a score. They had 287 on the ground as a team. Pavia was their leading rusher with 86 yards, 8 rushing touchdowns for the Commodores yesterday. Eli Stowers looks awesome. The defense had 3 sacks and 8 TFLs. Vandy scoring 70 is a sign in itself. Because Vandy, I've talked about this 100 times. I'm just repeating myself. But this is a new age of Vanderbilt football. Because even against bad teams 8 years ago, you're not seeing them put up 70 points. That's not what they do, but they're doing it now. This team is playing with such confidence and such a flow and such a rhythm. They are so, so dangerous with another easy game coming up next week. All right, cupcakes are done. Let's get into the proverbial meat and potatoes here, and we're starting off with Florida at Miami, 26-7 for the Canes. It is officially time. Billy Napier should not be the coach of the Florida Gators when Texas comes in there in 13 days after Florida's bye week. The offense is absolutely horrible. And that is Billy Napier's, that's where he's planted his flag. He's been calling the plays all 4 years he's been in Gainesville. He has refused to delegate those responsibilities to somebody else despite pressure from everywhere. And it seems like it's only getting worse with the most talented offense he has had during his time in Gainesville. They had one good drive. One. 7 points in a game is absolutely inexcusable against anybody. You're the Florida Gators with a 5-star at quarterback, multiple 5-stars at receiver, one of the better running backs in the country in Jaden Ball. 7 points is pathetic. And diving into some specific examples that I found during this game. 3rd-and-1 with 11:55 left in the fourth quarter in a 13-7 game. This, I think, was Florida's second drive with a chance to go down and take the lead. On that 3rd-and-run, it's a Jaden Ball run up the gut. Everybody and their mother, also my dog, knew that play call was coming. The predictability of Billy Napier's offense other teams have literally come out and said, yeah, we knew what they were running because of how predictable Napier's offense is. There are no wrinkles. There's nothing new. There's nothing creative. It's just this vanilla offense that doesn't work, and he won't budge off of it. On the 4th-and-4, I think, on a later drive, they threw a route to Tawaski Abrams, who ran the route short of the sticks, and he's not big enough to fall forward. He doesn't play. Tawaski Abrams does not play. And the 4th-down design is for him? It's mind-numbing stuff that nobody would call. You have to get plays to your best players in ways that the defense won't see coming. You can give the ball to Jaden Ball all you want, but if you run it up the gut when Miami is expecting it and they've been dominating the trenches, you're going to fail. If you throw the ball to Tawaski Abrams on 4th-down, you're going to fail. And one more thing that didn't get a lot of coverage. On a run for Miami from Tramar Brown on the drive that effectively put Florida away, their first touchdown of that second half, at the bottom of a pile, Jamari Lyons ripped off Tramar Brown's helmet. And the broadcast didn't really mention it, but you could see Brown at the end of that play, like looking at the ref, like, he ripped my helmet off. And he did. It was an uncalled, what would have been an unsportsmanlike penalty from Jamari Lyons. Again, we saw it in the USF game when Brandon Betts spit on the guy. That was another unsportsmanlike worthy act from a Florida defender in a spot where they just couldn't afford it. Like, the team is not thinking. They're not, I don't want to say they're not smart, but they're not playing smart. They're playing emotional, and they're playing out of their bodies, out of their minds. Like, everything is wrong. Everything is wrong with this team, from the culture to the schemes. Everything is bad. Into the X's and O's a little bit here. Florida had 141 total yards, went 0 of 13 on 3rd-down. I'm going to let you guys sit with that one for a second. 0 of 13 on 3rd-down and only 141 total yards. Lagway was 12 of 23 passing, 61 yards in the air, 5 yards per completion. This is not a service academy. This is the Florida Gators. And those are the numbers that they're putting up. Jaden Ball led the team in receptions with 3. Your running back, against a weaker, I won't say weak secondary, but against a team whose weakness is their secondary, your running back leads your team in catches and only with 3? It's horrible. It's horrible. They allowed 4 sacks and 7 TFLs against a Miami front, which, to their credit, is very, very good. Is very good. But, I mean, this predictable, slow offense where DJ Lagway looks inaccurate and uncomfortable, you can't keep running it out there. You can't keep running it out there. And I think that Herbstreit on the broadcast nailed it. He was talking about how nobody on the offense is even competing. There was never any fire. There was little to no emotion. The defense had it, but the offense never did. And that's been the problem for Florida all year. To give Miami their credit, though, 5.3 yards per carry. They were running the ball so well all day, 8 of 16 on third down. Carson Beck didn't do a lot. He didn't have to. It was the same thing as the LSU game, where the passing game for Florida's opponent didn't need to be there because of how bad Florida's offense was. But Mark Fletcher ran the ball 24 times for 116 yards and a score. Jamar Brown ran it 18 times for 80 yards and 2 scores. Miami won this game, straight up. But Florida is in a spot where they just cannot afford to keep Billy Napier. This team is broken. The team is absolutely broken. They're not going to win more than one more game this year, I don't think. Maybe they can get to 3 wins, but with Napier as the head coach, as the team currently is, this team is not going to get to 4-8. They're just not. So a change just has to be made. All right, on to something a little more fun, Auburn at Oklahoma. This game was awesome. Oklahoma won 24-17. I was really impressed with both teams defensively because on third downs, Auburn was 3 of 15, Oklahoma was 3 of 12. Yards per rush, Auburn got 1.9, Oklahoma got 1.2. Now you can look at that and say, these offenses are not any good. What is going on? I'm choosing to look at it from a defensive lens because both these offenses, they have valuable data points against solid teams, Auburn versus Baylor and Oklahoma versus Michigan, where the offenses work. Like, these offenses can put up points. But against these two defenses, they were both good enough to limit both offenses. Oklahoma, I mean, bottom line of this game, Oklahoma had 10 sacks and 14 tackles for loss. It's the same story for Jackson Arnold in Norman. I believe he has the record for most times an Oklahoma quarterback was sacked in Norman, and it was also the record for an opposing quarterback sacked in Norman. He just does not like playing on that field at all. R. Mason Thomas, Oklahoma's best defensive end, he missed the first half, still finished the game with 2 sacks. That kind of playmaker, that kind of elite pass rusher. Isaiah Satania, he looks really good for Oklahoma at receiver. Deion Burks now has a true running mate. Satania had 9 catches for 127 yards and a touchdown. Mateer throwing the ball was 24 of 36 for 271 and a touchdown. On the Auburn side of things, I did think Jackson Arnold played pretty well, all things considered. He was 21 of 32 in the air, 220 and a touchdown. He ran the ball pretty well. The sack yardage being mixed in obviously messed with the stats a lot, but I mean, he had a really clutch fourth down scramble. I thought he looked pretty good given everything. Cam Coleman was awesome. He had 3 catches for 88 yards and a score. Auburn only got home to Mateer 1 time. So the sack disparity being 9, it's impossible to win a game when that happens. What everybody's talking about is that wrongly officiated touchdown for Oklahoma when Isaiah Satania was coming off the field, presenting him, I think official terminology is presenting as a substitution. And then he ran the route hidden on the sideline. First off, I disagree with that rule. I think that's the defense's responsibility to be on that and know what's happening. But regardless of what I think, a rule is a rule and it should have been flagged. At the end of the day, despite that counting as a touchdown, Auburn had the lead in the fourth quarter. If they go out there and get a stop, it doesn't even matter. But they didn't. If you leave the game in the hands of the officials, you are going to get burned. That is an old adage. Everybody understands that. So both things can be true at the same time. The play was officiated wrong and it should have come back. But we don't know that Oklahoma wouldn't have scored anyways. And also, Auburn went down in the fourth quarter and took the lead. And they couldn't get one more stop. So regardless, Oklahoma went out there and earned the game. And this was an awesome game between two teams who I really liked in the preseason. And I do think after this, I think both teams really showed why they can go out and win a lot of games. I haven't lost confidence in either squad after what we saw yesterday. Moving on now, South Carolina at Missouri, 29-20 Missouri. This ground game disparity is unbelievable. Missouri had 285 total yards, running for 5.9 yards per carry. South Carolina, this is including sack yardage, ran for negative 0.4 yards per carry. The first down battle, 29-15 in favor of Missouri. Total yards, 456 to 293 in favor of Missouri. And the game was still competitive. Bo Prabula, I thought, was just okay. 16-27 passing for 171 and a touchdown. Also had a pick. Ahmad Hardy is my pick to win the Doak Walker Award at this point. 22 carries, 138 yards, and a touchdown. He is impossible to bring down. Such a physical, violent runner who just loves gashing through defenses. And defensively, Missouri sacked Sellers 5 times, but despite that, I did think Lenoris played pretty well despite being questionable all week. He was 18 of 28 through the air, threw for 302 and 2 touchdowns. He wasn't much of a running threat, which I do believe was a direct consequence of the concussion last week. But Missouri is real. That defense is so good. The running game is incredible. Those are just two major championship check marks that Missouri has already established through 4 games. And South Carolina is not dead. That I thought I was really impressed with how they came out and fought this week with after their quarterback was questionable, after a bad loss against Vandy at home. They really came out and fought and could have won this game if a few more things had gone their way. But with 2 losses already, their margin for error is gone. Now, last year, we saw them really turn it around after I don't want to say slow start, but I mean a start with a few losses. They turned it around, capped off the year with a win at Clemson, and looked like a really, really good team and was in playoff conversations. I still think that's on the table for them. But the schedule is not easy, and their margin for error is gone. So we'll see if Shane Beamer is really able to turn this team around like that and get them playing at an elite level. I do think it's possible, but it's a lot harder now that they're 2-2. This game was an absolute heartbreaker. Arkansas at Memphis. 32-31 Memphis. I mean, Arkansas in every sport. Can we please give these fans a break from just emotional turmoil? They blew a big lead. I believe they were up by 17 in that first half. The late fumble from Mike Washington Jr. when they were well within, I mean, they were on the 10-yard line. They had that game salted away before they let the ball go. Taylen Green, I thought, played fine. He threw for 325, did have 2 picks. That was a problem. Mike Washington ran the ball 15 times for 70 yards and a score, had that late fumble, like I mentioned. The offense just totally stalled in the second half. And at halftime of that game, I posted a video about how Arkansas's offense is so good. Taylen Green is incredible. Let's see if they can close it out. Then they scored 3 points in the second half. And I looked like a dumbass. And I don't like looking dumb. So I'm mad at Arkansas. But, I mean, this team is clearly talented. Their offense has so many good players. They just didn't adjust. Pittman got outcoached by Memphis in that second half because the offense was only able to score 3 points. Can they get off the mat for a home game against a Notre Dame team next week that's 1-2, has lost to both good teams that they've played, and they gave up a good bit of points to Purdue, the Notre Dame. They won comfortably, but they gave up a good bit of points. I think Arkansas can score on Notre Dame also, but let's see how much fight they really have. This is probably the turning point of their season next week when Notre Dame comes in. And then finally, Tulane at Ole Miss. 45-10 for Ole Miss. It was like an 11-point spread in this game. Ole Miss looked really, really good. Trinidad Chambliss is awesome. 307 yards and 2 touchdowns in the air. Also, 112 yards on the ground. Ole Miss's defensive front, I'm still somewhat concerned about because they got no sacks. When Tulane walks into your building, you want to cause a little more havoc. You want to get more sacks, more TFLs than Ole Miss had. But when you score 45, you can really get away with some defensive shortcomings. This offense is absolutely red hot for LSU this week when the Tigers go in to Oxford. That game's going to be awesome. Once again, we'll preview that later in the week. Don't want to get too into it now, but a really impressive showing from Ole Miss, from Trinidad Chambliss. This offense is as good as it's ever been. That'll do it. That is all of the Week 4 SEC action recapped for you guys. I have been Will Thomas. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Tailgate Talk SEC. We'll have preview stuff all week as we get ready for another week of SEC football.